SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and hour two. Thank Rich Glazier for the visit, and would also mention, it's funny, it's a 81-day meet, and coincidentally, at Delaware, it's their 81st season as well. So one day of racing for every day that, for every year that Delaware Park has been open. And you know, the one thing I didn't bring up with Rich was the unique presence of the Arabian races, the Arabians that end all the cards at Delaware Park. So looking forward. First post, 1:15, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Monday, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays at Delaware. And in terms of the, you know, the betting menu as well, pick four, sometimes starting in race five or in race six, through the, that doesn't include the Arabian race. And you've got, you know, very, really attractive low takeout structure for, you know, for a lot of the, you got the 15% pick five that starts mid card, race three usually. So Delaware Park, and again, if you ever get a chance to pass through, if you're going to be up and down the East Coast, and when Rich says minutes off of I-95, he's not kidding. Literally, you get off the highway and it's right there. So not it's not a little bit more when Colonial reopens next year. It's a little bit more of a trek to get to Colonial. Also well worth it, but easy to get to Delaware Park. Sid Fernando joins us. I'll ask Sid. Sid, have you been to Delaware?
Yes, I have. And in fact, I just passed at exit 4B off I-95. I just passed it recently, but I did. I have been to Delaware Park. And in fact, the first time I went to Delaware Park, I think I was 18 in 1978. And I actually went there that day to see Ford Go being paraded after he'd been retired that year, and they took him down to Delaware Park to parade him before fans. So I went down to see him, and I was fortunate, Steve, because that same day he went down was the day Spectacular Bid raced at Delaware Park. I think Spectacular Bid lost that race. He was a two-year-old, and he would later emerge, but yeah, I have been there, and it's a great track, and good memories too.
Well, now you're going to make me reach for the record book, and that's a tremendous memory. I love it.
I think it was called the Flash Stakes or something, and I think he was fourth. One of the rare times he lost, I believe.
Well, this was okay. There it is. August 20th, 1978. It was the Dover.
Dover, that's it, yeah.
It was the Dover, and he got beat. It was not the first loss of his career. He had lost the Tyro in the slop, actually, at Monmouth 3 weeks earlier.
And he lost this race, right?
Yeah, he got beat by Strike Your Colors.
Yeah. Well, that day, keep in mind that it's lost as a footnote in history, and people will never remember it, but that day, what did you say it was, August 20th?
Yeah.
That day was the day Martha Jerry sent and Frank Whiteley sent Ford Go to Delaware Park for a fan farewell. It was very one of the few times he left New York, but for some reason he was sent down to Delaware Park to parade in front of the fans, and I got a great spot. Again, I was 18, and man, I'll tell you, I was that. I was so close to him as he walked by me that I could feel his breath. And I took a look down at his legs, and I just could not believe the size of his near fore or left front leg. It was the size of a grapefruit, the ankle joint. I mean, it was massive. The calcification that had taken place over years. You know, the reason that Frank Whiteley used to hose him down for hours at a time, you know, to create a little lake behind his barn area at Belmont that was coined Lake Whiteley. It was forego, you know. They would just hose him for hours with cold water to keep those ankles tight. But, yeah, huge, mass. I've never seen, if somebody saw a leg, an ankle joint like that these days, Steve, there would be all sorts of animal abuse and PETA investigations. You know, they would not, a horse like Forego would not be allowed to race today.
Well, and now you got me looking. I found an article from August 21st, 1978. This is in the Delaware Morning News. Delaware Park lauds Forego.
There you go. How do you like that?
Very cool. I love it. I love it. Well, Sid, I'm going to use that as a segue, actually, because in a different kind of leg question, or at least you know, the way in which the pedigrees we discuss, how they fit into this Triple Crown conversation. We didn't talk last week, but you were
about the Off Run Justify.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'll tell you, yesterday, just looking at a couple of the still photographs, he has got, for a modern thoroughbred, I mean, he's got tree trunks for legs.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's a big horse, muscle, heavily muscled, big, tall, strong horse, you know, really an exceptional physical horse. A horse, as I mentioned to you some weeks ago on here, it had, you know, had surgery before he entered before he was sold as a yearling. And that was the only blemish, so to speak, on his veterinary record. And it was probably one of the reasons, Steve, that Coolmore, the purported buyer of the horse, the horse's breeding rights. It's probably one of the reasons that Coolmore didn't go past, you know, whatever they bid on it, and the horse was sold for $500,000 yearling. But it's probably one of the reasons they didn't pursue the horse as vigorously because of probably that vet report. They ended up, of course, buying Mendelssohn at the same sale for $3 million. Scat Daddy, of course, their stallion who died. You know, if details, you know, a generic press release said that there have been several people interested in this horse, and it's been reported, of course, that Coolmore was the buyer, or will be the buyer. And let me explain something to readers and listeners, I should say. You know, when taken at face value, when Elliot Walden issued the press release saying that no deal is done yet, I'll tell you, and you know, you'll appreciate this, but even if there's a deal in principle right now, as has been reported, and it's a huge amount of money, you have to realize that I was just mentioned to you that Justify was sold at the Keeneland sale, right? Well, he was sold as a yearling. He's going to be 3 years old. He is 3 years old now, but he'll be 3 years old in September of this year, 2 years removed from the Keeneland September sale. So people have to understand that one reason why it would be a deal in principle and really not consummated is that in September, it becomes a two-year-old asset and therefore qualifies for long-term capital gains. You can't announce a deal now and blow your capital gains, okay? It's a huge differential in tax between holding an asset for 2 years and, as anybody knows, qualifying for just ordinary income taxation. So that's one reason why a deal would be held in principle, Steve, and not actually be announced, or consummated, not just announced, but consummated. If this deal is held in principle, you can believe that anything that's taking place right now is all held in escrow for a future date for consummation.
There was there was a little too much fire last week. It wasn't just smoke.
there was
pretty clear that, and I sort of give everybody that was observing this kind of credit, understanding the position the parties were all being placed in too, and nobody really, everybody kind of understood, I think, that right away with the way the story flashed up, and then, you know, nobody feels it's worth recriminations at this point.
Also, what happens in a deal like this, Steve, is a couple of things that I tweeted about it. But one is, you know, to me and the New York Times and ESPN stories kind of missed the point that, you know, Windstar is also a breeding farm and a stallion station. You know, when they sold Take Charge Indy a few years ago, that was done kind of ruefully by Elliott Walden, but he felt that the offer was good enough and he had to take care of his shareholders, which are, you know, many of the same people as now. And so they went ahead and did it, even though when Windstar structures deals on these types of, especially this three-year arrangement they had with China Horse Club and SF Bloodstock, Kenny Trout takes 60%. 25% goes to China Horse Club. 15% is SF Bloodstock. So there's no deal that gets done unless Kenny Trout signs off on it. And in this particular case, it would justify, you know, what I've heard is that, you know, the Yoshidas made a big offer. The Yoshidas came back and made another big offer. And finally, Coolmore came and took the Yoshidas off the table. And usually when Coolmore does deals, they like to own the entire horse these days. That's been their MO. And so what struck me is, why would one big stallion farm, Windstar, sell to another big stallion farm without keeping some shares or lifetime breeding rights, LBRs as they're called? And it didn't make sense, and I've since, you know, I can only deduce that Windstar did end up keeping some shares and lifetime breeding rights in a deal that's done in principle. And so that was, you know, I would, you know, that type of nuance, of course, wouldn't be in a New York Times story, an ESPN story, but you can believe that, you know, Kenny Trout's not going to sell 100% of a horse without keeping, you know, the right to breed to the horse too.
Which you can understand. And I'll also ask you the question because it immediately came up, and some people didn't understand that numeric valuation. But in fact, $60 million, when you start doing the math and you assume that they're going to shuttle him the way they've shuttled American Pharoah and the way they shuttled Scat Daddy, that $60 million makes perfect sense.
Yeah, even if you do some napkin math, for example, without taking into consideration the second hemisphere, usually the old model of something like this was you want to make your money back in 4 years before before the horse gets his first runners, or during the season where the horse is going to get his first runners. So, for the sake of argument, if you assume in this particular napkin scenario, say you assume a stud fee of $100,000 to keep everything easy, and say 100 mares or 150 mares, say 150 mares at $100,000. Well, what's that? That's $15 million, right?
Yep.
100,000 times 150. 100. Yeah, that's $15 million. Am I correct?
A 150. You said
times 100,000.
Sure.
Yeah. That's $15 million. Let's just keep the numbers as simple so everybody can understand. So $15 million times 4 is $60 million, right? So there's your $60 million kind of valuation. You try to get out of the horse in 4 years. Get out means you try to make your money back in 4 years before in that time span. So just if you did a Northern Hemisphere scenario, that's $60 million right there. Then you do your Southern Hemisphere, and you take, say, a third of that value, and so you add another 20 to it. So there's $80 million right off the top that you're going to collect in a 4 year span. Okay, of course, there's expenses and yada, 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 but I'm just giving you some quick figures just to work out on how this stuff happens.
No, I wanted to do the exercise because some people thought that it was a crazy number, and it really wasn't.
And it's not that a crazy number because you'll understand that I only used $100,000 as a stud fee and 150 mares. Now, in reality, say he bred 200 mares and only 170 got in foal. But even if you use $100,000, that's $17 million, right? So keeping it at 150 mares with 100,000 stud fee just to keep everything easy for people to follow, that's the kind of math that you're looking at. It's well worth it for Coolmore. Because, as we've mentioned right along, Scat Daddy, everybody's looking for the heir apparent, and here's a dirt son, which is what everybody's been looking for. Not only that, but, a lot of what people didn't understand with this deal also was that this deal in principle was probably agreed upon before the Preakness as well. So, when you think about a $60 million figure that's being offered to a Derby winner before the Preakness and the Belmont, obviously, that's quite a risk. So for the owner of a horse, hey, that's a lot of money for a Derby winner. We don't know if he's going to win the Preakness or the Belmont. Put in context, it was an offer that, again, you had to take because you're talking about upfront money versus a money that the buyer would have to make over the duration of 4 years. But of course, if you have the luxury of waiting 4 years, and if the horse hits, you've got a gold mine on your hands, right? So it's when you have a partnership horse, you know, usually you want to have your shareholders cash out, which is what happens here. And when you're a company like Coolmore that's in the business for the long haul, it makes perfect sense to use that capital up front as an investment, because, you know, very likely you're going to make your investment back in 4 years. It's not, for them, it's almost a no-brainer.
Exactly. And I guess the only variable that would be an interesting sidebar would be how aggressive they might have been had Scat Daddy not expired.
Yeah, I think they would. Yeah, that's good. That's a very good point. But very good point. But I think that hypothetical, I guess we'll never be able to understand. But I think at that point, there was already kind of a feeling of trying to get those Scat Daddies, and of course, Coolmore's always on top of trends with stallions. They'd already taken No Name Never. They had Caravaggio over there. They were looking for that. They knew at that point what they had on their hands with Scat Daddy. He jumped his stud fee already from $30,000 to $100,000, which was the year he died in that winter before he could cover mares for $100,000. But it was a remarkable story, because some of those horses that were helping to make the horse were conceived on a $10,000 stud fee. His reputation in Chile had just thrown to a level of superstardom over there, because and that's where he'd shuttled for several seasons, 3 years. Ironically, the one shuttle season he had to Australia was a flop. It just shows you how certain stallions will hit in some southern hemisphere countries, but not others. And Australia, you have to view it as a separate type of entity altogether from South America, because Australia, you need to come out running. It's a hard track, sprints, and some sprint musculature is required. And that's why some horses, like Scat Daddy for one, Galileo for another, in Galileo's case, he prefers the softer turf and more distance, and an American horse, Unbridled Song, big, rangy, scopy horse, gets good two-year-olds, but again, you need turf and turf sprints, and it was better for the Unbridled Song to be given a little more time. Those horses, Unbridled Song, Scat Daddy, and Galileo, super sires, never hit in Australia.
Is that a function? That's an interesting point, and an interesting, again, sidebar. Is that a function of the uniqueness of the families, the, you know, the strong identifiable families in Australasia? And I suppose that also figures into another story from recent weeks, the past week, the acquisition by Shade. Of Biscuit,
Mind Your Biscuits,
and his potential in terms of interfacing with the female bloodlines down there.
Well, yeah. Now, of course, Japan is the Northern Hemisphere Japan, but good point, and I'll tell you, they've been, the Japanese and Shaddai, Yoshidas have bought a lot of stamina mares lately. I mean, they've had stamina sires in terms of all their Sunday Silence sires, Deep Impact, and they were breeding a lot of speedier mares to those sires in recent years. Now they're also introducing some speedier stallions to the mix, and they're finding a big-time success. Lord Kanaloa, an outstanding sprinter, by King Kamehameha, a King Mambo stallion that also stands at Shedeye. But Lord Kanaloa was a notable sprinter, extremely fast, rare for a Japanese-bred sprinter, Steve. And his first crop now has yielded the 1,000 guineas and Japanese Oaks winner, Amanai. So a sprinter has been able to bring them some classic horses as well, right? And that's why they've taken not only Mind Your Biscuits, but before him, Dre Fong. So they're trying to add some speed to their coterie over there. Now, as far as the other question about Australia, Southern Hemisphere, like Japan, hard tracks, but where stamina and classics are part of the game in Japan. And in Australia, of course, it's all speed. We see that. And the Melbourne Cup really is an anomaly. The bread and butter is sprinting and speed and two-year-old racing. The Golden Slipper is considered the real great race there. You need some bulk. You need some musculature, some speed. You need a handy horse. Dane Hill and the Danzig line provided that. Dane Hill, especially, why he was so successful there. And when you look at horses like Galileo, who needs softer courses and a trip, Unbridled Song, big rangy horse, isn't handy enough. And Scat Daddy, I don't know why he didn't hit there, honestly, because he does get sprinters on turf. So that's a big. That'll be a big question mark, sure.
In addition, Sid, to some of these kinds of stories and stallion stories, I also got to fold in. I want you to give an early glance at the Belmont lineup, and you know we've got the Tappet Curlin storylines that have really dominated the recent Belmonts. But before we do that, how about the weekend looking at Lucky Hat running 1-2?
Oh, my goodness.
It was unbelievable. Runs 1-2 in the Gold Cup. And then Money Multiplier wins the Monmouth Stakes as well.
Yeah. Whatever looking at Lucky does, we're always proud of him because he was a worked over consultant's mating recommendation for longtime clients at the time. It was, in fact, the Smart Strike was the number one pick for us for that mare. And, of course, he went on to win the Preakness for Bob Baffert. Went to Coolmore Stud. Kind of been hitting below star status. But people in the know understand that this horse is a great stallion for racehorse owners. And if you're breeding to race, I mean, you know, great value. Yeah, and he keeps doing it on dirt, turf, really any surface. He gets lost as the son of Smart Strike sometimes. You know, when you've had horses like Curlin front and center. But this horse is a very good stallion. And sometimes you just need one of those big streaky days, Steve, to bring the attention back to you, and then people realize, hey, this horse has got great numbers, you know. And now I'm happy to see that happen. And he's legit. He's a legit stallion.
Well, we certainly know when it comes to Curlin and Tappet, we know their resumes and their bona fides. Sid, the Belmont has been a unique playground for the two of them. And there's some particular crossover in this conversation as we look ahead to next week, and I'll wait, of course, until the field gets drawn on Tuesday. And we talk on Wednesday to, you know, finalize
it. Can you text me over the horses you know that are going to the Belmont?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. After I get off, just text them over to me so I can take a look at them.
You got it. You know, for our purposes, you know, when we look at Vino Rosso by Curlin out of the Street Cry Mare, Tenfold by Curlin out of the Tappet Mare, Hofberg, Tappet out of a Touch Gold Mare, Bravazo, Awesome Again out of a C's Tizzy Mare. You know, for people that are looking for 12 furlong horses, your project should be looking for horses that aren't bred for 12 furlongs in this race.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, Justify maybe on the short end of this end of the pedigree thing, really compared to some of these horses. but absolutely, yeah, it's going to be an interesting race, and of course, if the running style, the way it's been played out, really does favor a horse like Justify, a horse that can control the speed. And it'll be interesting, Steve, if, you know, there's always outrage in this country about running pacemakers and stuff like that. Lately, I should say, there's been some outrage lately. It's been pretty well accepted beforehand. But, you know, if you were going to, if I'm a guy like Brad Kelly or something, again, hypothetically, you know, this is a perfect race to run a pacemaker. Because one of the reasons that this race has become almost quote unquote easier than the Derby is the pace scenario is softer, you know. And the Derby ends up becoming a really truly run 10 furlongs, and it will find you out. And sometimes the Belmont, and there have been some really great horses that have won it, including a horse that was so speed-oriented. I happen to see that race myself, too, Bold Forbes, that probably would not have won that race except for a few things. One, the exceptional training job of Laz Barrera, and two, the fact that nobody tested him in up front like they did, like Honest Pleasure obviously did in the Preakness, where Bo Forbes ran, 109 six furlongs in the Preakness. So getting back to my thing, it's the pace scenario, as everybody knows, is so much easier in the Belmont that I've always wondered why, pacemakers haven't been employed more for some deep closers. And I'm just throwing that out there. Just as a matter of wonder.
Well, we are certainly looking forward to this, and we'll start broadcasting tomorrow from Belmont. And Sid, we'll have this field. I sent you the set of PPs, and you can.
Yeah. Okay. Great. I appreciate that.
All right.
I just got that text message. My phone is busted. I got to get a new phone today. So.
All right. There's your.
If I sound bad on this thing, I apologize.
No, you sound fine.
Okay. Good.
We also, we're going to see you next week. You're going to come out to Belmont one of the days?
Yeah. And in fact, I'm thinking about coming out. My son Joe is up from Florida visiting for a week. And he's gotten into going to the dog track down there. And we might come out to Belmont and play some races this week, too.
Outstanding. Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll. Let me know, and we'll see you out there. And if there's the occasion to get a morning visit in live, if it overlaps, we'll schedule it that way.
Oh, great! Yeah, excellent.
Sid, one last question too. Breeding season,
sure,
breeding season, pretty much, you know, wound down some, there's a couple of, there's still a couple of late season covers going on.
Yeah. You know, a lot of horses, notably Northern Dancer was a May 27th foal, I believe. You know, there are some people that, especially owner breeders, will breed. We're talking May right now, entering June. But, you know, June horses, you know, mid-June cover is going to get your mid-May foal, too. There just so happens to be some mares that end up foaling late, and people don't want to give them one open year. They'll breed them back, and I find that more, obviously for commercial reasons, a lot of people don't like to do it, but a lot of people breeding to race do. And, you know, it's something where people will breed into the middle of June to get that May foal.
And you can also, considering that the books were pretty much fulfilled, it's also an opportunity to get a discounted cover in
great
a lot of cases.
Great point. Yeah. Right now is the greatest opportunity to get a discount. And that's a very good point, Steve. And people are amazed sometimes how much of a discount he can get. And in general, as the season progresses, you have a sliding scale a lot of times with discounts and or availability too. Sometimes a horse that's not available early,
that's right,
for example, they'll fit you in later on. So, you know, there's, if you're stuck having to be to breed later in a season, sometimes you get compensated by, as you pointed out, price and or availability.
You know, and on that topic, Dr. Alday is going to join us next. We're going to talk about the fertility issues that result in Battle of Midway being put back into training. But at the same time, I'll make the suggestion that, you know, make sure that your mare that was covered earlier in the year may have been pronounced in foal, but it can be worth checking again before it's too late. If they slipped or absorbed, make sure your mare's in foal. And because this is, you know, these next couple of weeks, pretty much your last chance. You don't want to find out July 1st that your mare's not in foal. So,
that's exactly right.
Glad we brought this up. And Dr. Alday is going to explain the fertility issue. And if you want to shop for one of those late-season discounts, get a hold of Sid, 510-490-1111, 510-490-1111. Work Thoroughbred Consultants, and, of course, you get the Lion Score, your broodmare compatibility analysis. You've also probably had a chance to, if you had a chance to see how foal is shaped up, and help you make some decisions. And the season's not quite over. So get a hold of Sid.
Thanks, Steve.
I appreciate it. Sid, I'll see you next week.
All right, you got it.
Bye. Sid Fernando, everybody. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale, and plenty of Hill and Dale conversation. In fact, think about the success of Midnight Disguise, the Midnight Loot filly for Linda Rice and Sheila Rosenblum, and all the curling conversation leading in toward Belmont. Let's take a break. We're past the bottom of the hour, and we will visit with Dr. Stephen Alday. We'll get his Triple Crown season thoughts. We haven't talked since before Derby, and he'll explain the subfertility issue that resulted in Battle of Midway coming back into training, and what might have transpired from the time, you know, he was, you know, put into service and judged as a stallion. I mean, they certainly check for fertility before they start to cover mares. And there's even they even test. There's test mares. They give him a chance even before, the serious start to a stud career. So what could have gone wrong? Why is Battle of Midway, why did he miss hit with so many mares? Just five out of 60. Not six, I was going to say six out of 50, but it's five out of 60. Dr. Stephen Alday. Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. Next, Jeremy Plonk to come, and Seth Merrow as well. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
All day, all night, all day, all night. All day, all night, all night. What the fuck?
We're back at the races, 20, make it 15 to the top of the hour, and didn't get a chance through the early portion of the Triple Crown to talk to Dr. Alday, but we'll take the opportunity now. We'll catch up. Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. Dr. Stephen Alday, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Steve, take a quick survey of your impressions as we are two-thirds of the way through the spring ritual, the odyssey that is the Triple Crown. Your impressions between stops at Churchill and Pimlico.
Well, I mean, it's a difficult situation when you get a bad track, but everybody's got to run over the same racetrack, so you have to. Hat to the winner, and certainly give him credit for what he's gone through. He's had a really, really short career campaign from start to present. And as of next week from this coming Saturday, he'll have made his
sixth start in like 113 days, something like that, 112 days, I believe it is. And that's pretty remarkable. I mean, you know, the fact that a horse can do that and be that effective against, you know, top company of his peers, all comers from all over the country, is pretty impressive. So you certainly have to give him all the credit in the world. The only thing I'm a little concerned about is that eventually any type of time you race this at this level and at, you know, and on such a short schedule, you know, you have to be concerned that, you know, somewhere they're compromised. I ask what, that's my biggest concern, because that's, you know, that's kind of what I do. And not actually, the better stated, is exactly what I do. And it troubles me a little bit that, you know, that, I mean, I'm a little worried that, you know, I mean, he's certainly shown some wear and tear. Wet tracks are can be a little, you know, difficult to manipulate and to navigate, so to speak, or obviously, you know, to use a bad pun. But, I mean, with luck, because Belmont, you know, when it, if it were to rain there too, I would certainly give this horse an edge, because he certainly seems to handle it well. But the problem with Belmont is they seal it, and if it is sealed, it's extremely hard and very fast. So that could be, you know, even more problematic. And I think, you know, just by watching, I'm not so sure maybe that Good Magic didn't basically maybe show a little chink in the armor by putting a little more pressure on him. Because, you know, certainly Steve Asmussen's horse and ultimately Wayne Lucas's horse closed, you know, very, very strong in the Preakness. And this is, like, you know, 1/8 or 1/16 of a mile shorter than the Derby was. So, you know, and this horse has shown, you know, I mean, I know that they seem to think he's a very versatile horse, but so far that's pretty, you know, kind of like, I'm kind of like from Missouri on that one. You got to show me, because he's been on the lead every race he's been. And, you know, the guys, Mike's come back without a, you know, like a drop of mud on him. So, you know, if he gets pressured enough, I'm not so sure going a mile and a half that that couldn't be maybe his undoing. So, you know, maybe we're going to see a little old-fashioned racing, meaning that, you know, they're going to put a rabbit in there and he's going to have to show he's the best horse. So if he does that, you know, maybe with the horse breathing down his throat or putting up a really, really good, solid, you know, three-quarter fraction, which literally three-quarters in that race is half the race. It could be interesting. It could be an interesting outcome. We'll see.
When before we talk about Battle of Midway and the fertility issue, when you are looking at a horse several days, let's say after a Derby, then after the Preakness, what and how quickly can any physical properties start to show themselves, and what would they be? I mean, what when Baffert and Jimmy Barnes are watching him gallop, and you know, even when he's walking the first couple of days after the wins in the Derby and Preakness, what are you looking for? How does a horse exhibit?
Typically, Steve, that's a great question, actually, because I think the public gets really, really, you know, almost, I mean, and and they're only reading and digesting what people are writing. But, you know, the first thing all trainers say right after a race is, you know, the horse came back, he looks great, he ate up, this sort of thing, he looks super the next day. Well, you know, in all honesty, you know, and I've said this at once, or probably said it maybe, you know, maybe a dozen times, at least with you and on this particular program, is that, you know, I hold my breath for roughly between 5 and 7 days post, and that's a long time to hold your breath, by the way, post race for about 5 to 7 days. And the reason why is because most of the real, possibly career-ending, severe traumatic injuries, things like this, don't really show up for about roughly up to about a week after a major event or a major effort. Both tendons don't show up right after. There's got to be basically some stretching of the fibers in particular. And I'm just picking a certain type of injury that we would deal with. A lot of times a crack in a sesamoid, a tear in a suspensory, a crack in a cannon bone, a chip in a joint. they won't necessarily show up for a few days because you got medication in these horses, you know, post race that's going to kind of linger around a little bit. And, you know, I mean, you certainly want them to come out, but you got to really be attentive to like everything being 100%. That's why it kind of surprised me that, you know, they walked the horse out the day after the Derby in particular, and then, you know, he was, you know, visibly off in that. It looked like a foot to me, but like I said, I didn't look at the horse. So. But I don't know what they said. I think somebody said something that he had a cracked heel or something like that. But anyway, I've never seen cracked heels make one quite that lame unless it was pretty severe, and I don't think that horse would get to that level personally. But anyway, it comes down to just, you know, you really have to kind of like, you know, just take it day by day. Let the horse tell you where you are. And if you can get past that first 5 to 7 days post major exertion, you know, maximum or major effort, yeah, I think you're in pretty good shape. And so obviously this horse, you know, came out of the race pretty good because I know you put in a pretty good work here at Churchill. I believe it was yesterday or the day before.
Yesterday, yeah.
You know, he looked good doing it. So, you know, bottom line is, you know, I mean, it looks like everything's going good for him. You know, as far as like, you know, the timing and, you know, how he stands up against his peers and this sort of thing. But, you know, every time the biggest hole, and it kind of like is the lesson learned maybe for the guys like with California Chrome, you know, the reason why that the Triple Crown for 3-year-olds is such an acid test is because you take on all comers in the Derby, 2 weeks later you take on all comers in the Preakness, and then 3 weeks later you take on all comers in the Belmont. Whether they raced in the first two or they didn't race at all in either one of those. So you're going to go up against fresh competition. You're going to go up against old competition. You're going to go get horses that ran in the Derby, not necessarily in the Preakness. And you know, they're going to sit down and calculate out a plan on how to you know, break the stride, break the, you know, the momentum that this horse has built up and try to figure out a way to take him down. And that's racing. That's how it goes. You know, I mean, this is kind of a throwback to, you know, seeing a rabbit in there would be kind of interesting, which I'm pretty sure that's what's going to occur. I mean, I hope everybody's not thinking that, wow, boy, you're throwing gas on a fire here, but I got news for you. I mean, if you watch those races and you believe the pressure might make this horse maybe kind of, you know, put a little chink in his armor, he's certainly going to take advantage of it because it's a competition, it's racing, you know, and you got to be ready for it.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And Baffert, of course, having the unique circumstance of having tried several times before and then succeeding with American Pharoah and then what's been accomplished so far with this horse. I appreciate Steve that insight. Let me also utilize the opportunity to talk about what went on with Battle of Midway and the fact that he was put into service, and I suggested that even before a horse starts to, you know, cover the book of mares, they get tested. They test the sperm, then they're going to test the ability to cover mares, and finding out after a first season when the results come in and the horse is only impregnated 5 out of 60. It's pretty stunning. Talk about this process and what could have gone wrong between the initial testing and you know, preparation for him to become a stallion, and then the reality that he's subfertile and just his swimmers aren't making it to shore.
Well, I think the first thing you have to understand, Steve, is that, you know, when a horse goes to stud, I mean, you know, before they actually do, you know, the deal and get them set up, you know, that they will do an evaluation of both his anatomy, right, and this sort of thing, and make sure everything looks normal. And they'll even go to the trouble when he goes to the shed of getting collection and evaluating his semen. But the spermatozoa in a horse is quite a unique situation because the physiology of that is only viable, or it's only really, really recognized when you end up having something like this that occurs. And it doesn't really happen that often. Now, there tend to be some stallions that have had this issue after they go to stud. One in particular, which was really unique, was Cigar, who I was around, you know, both as a yearling, 2-year-old, 3-year-old, 4-year-old, and then until he was, you know, taken out of California and sent to New York. But he basically didn't stop any mares. He didn't stop the first mare. And then other horses that come to mind that showed very, very low fertility, and they're certainly from, you know, excellent programs that certainly do their homework and have a great track record, is Ashford in particular had Lure. And Lurf turned out to be a very, very low fertility horse. And, of course, they moved him from, here in Kentucky and then sent him to Europe. And he still had, you know, a very, very difficult time stopping mares and had very, very low numbers. Now, exactly why that occurs, well, they find out that these horses don't produce the number of viable spermatozoa that they produce are not that, percentage-wise, aren't viable enough to survive long enough to go ahead and actually fertilize eggs, this kind of thing. So, you know, there's a lot of things that go into this equation. Cigar in particular was like he didn't produce hardly any live spermatozoa. They were all dead when they were produced. And who knows what went on in his makeup. And they gave him to Phil McCarthy and some of the best repro people that we know, you know, on the planet. And they never could, you know, solve this particular problem. And you get the odd stallion, Steve, that this occurs with. And, you know, sometimes they can do, you know, miraculous things, put some sort of, you know, hormone stimulating pumps, things like this that can make a difference. But sometimes you get a horse that just has this physiology to his, you know, the production of his spermatozoa, and they can still produce some, and in a perfect situation, they can get some impregnated, but in the live cover situation, it's, you know, obviously, you know, being that, you know, you're only talking about 5 and 60, which, you know, is a very, very, like, less than 10%, obviously, you know, this is going to be a difficult, very, very difficult horse to manage, and probably you'll see a very, very abbreviated stud career, or maybe not one, you know, of any longevity whatsoever, and which is, you know, a shame. He's obviously a nice horse. But, yeah, I mean, these things happen, and exactly how you deal with them, there's a number of ways, but, you know, you try to get them to the experts and see if they can't, you know, solve the puzzle and, you know, find ways to try to, like, add extenders, you know, after he's covered, you know, to the inseminate and whatever. But bottom line is, there's something that's occurred, you know, that is creating a problem for him. And it's still possible, being that he's a young horse. I mean, he's only 4 years old this year, so that this is possible. He could kind of have this, or 5 years old this year, I guess. This riddle could be, you know, still solved at this point, but it's going to take a lot of work. I mean, you're going to have to go back and go through his, you know, spermatogenic, you know, or the production of his spermatozoa, his makeup and chemical and, you know, treatment wise and whatever, and just try to see if they can't, you know, figure out a way to kind of, you know, see if he'll come around. Now, with time, certain horses get better, but the fact that he's a mature horse, you know, if he was just a 3-year-old going to stud, it'd be one thing. But the fact that he's, you know, an older horse, you know, going to stud, it's, you know, I mean, this is a, you know, typical retirement situation. And, you know, 60 mares exposed is not a huge book. I mean, American Pharoah is covering in this hemisphere alone over 100 mares. And he's going to get another 100 down in Australia, or at least he did last year anyway. So it's just, you know, it's going to take a long, you know, really, really microscopic evaluation of exactly what's going on and how it occurs. And they're going to have to do a lot of trial and error and treatments and try to figure out what they can do to salvage him. If he's salvageable, you know, it's going to be a tough situation. It's not going to get easier.
What's the typical percentage, Steve, when it comes to just a normal, healthy stallion and their strike rate?
Well, typically a really, really good fertile stallion that's very healthy without problems or complications will basically cover, you know, I mean, a normal book of mares or these real popular stallions. Let's say we'll take, you know, just a number that's easy to cover, which is like 50 mares. You know, typically 50 covers, you get somewhere between 42-45 mares impregnated or mares pregnant from that. So 90% rate thereabouts. Even get higher with certain horses that are really, really fertile and they don't have huge books, because that's why horses get older. They basically, you know, I mean, they have the same type of situation where the maladies of old age start to affect them a little bit, and they don't have the libido sometimes. And what can happen is, you know, if their backs get a little sore, maybe hock stifles, things that they kind of succumb to, soft tissue injuries, whatever, in the past, maybe part of their racing career, become exacerbated a little bit with time. They don't try to book as many mares to them, you know, because it's harder to keep weight on them. It's hard to keep their interest. And but like horses like Giant's Causeway, I mean, he's still, up until this past year when he, you know, he had a colic issue whenever, and he ended up succumbing to that. But this horse covered, you know, a lot of mares every year and did well. And, you know, they started managing his book a little bit more. They knew they're going to breed less mares to him, but he still had a pretty good rate of, you know, I mean, he was the upwards 80s and 90% most of his career. So, you know, this is a pretty typical number with most horses that are managed well. They really keep a close eye on their health overall. And, you know, we do, like, for instance, when I go over to Ashford and look at stands, we do a routine physicals, make sure they're good and sound. I go over them just like I do, like, the racehorses, just to make sure they're capable and comfortable to go ahead and keep doing their job properly and do it soundly, just like they would, you know, if they were a racehorse.
Now, you do, so you do give a slight chance that down the road, Battle of Midway could try again, or sure. There's also the matter of there was also the matter of collecting on apparently a fertility policy.
Right. Well, that's the bad part. And obviously, you know, what can and does happen is if, you know, he's insured for fertility, and most horses that go to stud for significant, you know, numbers, as far as financial, you know, compensation, they would have a fertility clause in there. And these things are, you know, evaluated very, very closely, you know, so that would be a legal thing. But sometimes, you know, if it looks like it's a bust, the insurance company, you know, may go to the trouble of let's say, you know, the thing that's promising to some extent is that the fact that he can get some mare pregnant. That's a good thing. The second thing is the numbers are abysmally low. So he's not a good commercial sire, in other words, a horse, you know, to go ahead and undergo a commercial venture. So somewhere somebody's going to have to bite the bullet and decide either we're going to pay off on his claim and then either turn him over to somebody that can see if they can fix him and then, you know, go back and revisit, or they're basically just going to pull the plug and say, hey, we're not going to keep this horse for a stud because he's too hard management and we really can't. Too much of a calculated risk, so to speak, or high risk for what you'd have to put into him to manage and this sort of thing. So, I mean, at this point in time, he would have a black mark against him and have a tremendous flag for somebody wanting to stand horse a stud until they get the problem fixed and show that the numbers can be, you know, evaluated. They'll be looking at his foal crops very, very closely and deciding if it's actually worth, you know, to undergo this particular this mission, so to speak, because it's not going to be easy. It's going to take a while to figure it out. But it does occur. Yes, it's possible, Steve, but it's going to take a lot of effort, and it's not going to be cheap.
Is there hereditary issues sometimes or lines? You know, certainly lines have died out for different reasons in terms of North American breeding. But has this been an issue that has dogged, you know, certain sire lines at all?
Sure. I can't, right off the top of my head, I could maybe give me enough time to think about it, but
sure.
There are horses that have come from sire lines that have low fertility. Now, the standardbreds have had some exactly like that, and I could give you some names, but it really wouldn't make any difference at this point. But the point I'm making is that if that is the case, what they, you know, I mean, obviously standardbreds have the advantage where they can use extenders and use a lot more intervention because they can collect these horses and, you know, and do the insemination and you know, reinforce. And of course, with these horses, you do a lot more reinforced breeding, things like this. And we're on the collection and evaluation of a really good ejaculate. You want to go ahead and you know, go ahead and inseminate a mare with that really, really better ejaculate or quality semen. And, you know, so, you know, science can override this to some extent. But, you know, I mean, nature, you know, I mean, the situation that we deal with thoroughbreds is quite simply that a live stallion has to cover, you know, a mare.
Right.
And then after that, they will go ahead and, you know, put semen back in there after collection. But you know, or excess after they evaluate, you know, motility, things like this, the normal, you know, parameters that you want to screen routinely as you're in a breeding shed. But it can be a bit complicated. And yes, there's a high correlation between that, you know, that I remember about certain lines that horses just don't seem to carry the same level of fertility that other families through the lines do.
It just occurred just to ask that. And the other question that came up with Sid Fernando just now, it occurred to me in advance of this discussion, with breeding season winding down, I made the suggestion, and you can tell me how practical it is, that people get their mares a late season check, make sure your mare is indeed in foal, may have been declared in foal a month ago, 2 months ago, 3 months ago. However, you don't know. There could be slips. There could be absorption. You probably a good spot on the calendar to make sure your mare is still in foal, right?
Well, obviously, but you know, I'm going to tell you straight. The really, really well managed barns or stables, as you know, programs do routine. They keep them on a routine cycle check because there's certain key times that are really, really critical that you got to make sure a pregnancy is being maintained and looks healthy and this sort of thing. The instrumentation and the diagnostic tools that we have available to us, both chemically and the techniques of the maintenance of hormones, the maintenance drugs and hormones that we use, and the progesterones that are available orally and injectable, and the fact that there's key times at 30 plus days, 32, 33 days that, you know, we know that the placenta and the actual conceptus has to maintain itself. And then also at roughly 60 to 70 days, you know, depending on the individual, these are key times when you want to make sure your mare is still pregnant. So it's something that's done routinely, even though you get the initial pregnancy and you can find it, and then you go back in, you make sure you don't have twins, things like this, if you had double ovulation or whatever. And then the third thing is, you know, if you had something like that and you decided to go ahead and pinch one of them, just recheck it to make sure the absorption or there was an absorption of the viable fetus after the other one was, like, you know, gotten rid of, basically, or squeezed off or pinched off. And then you just like to just do a routine check and make sure that there's no separation. And then, of course, if you're maintaining your mares regularly, I mean, there's a key time after that period of time when a mare gets up to about 100, 120 days where there's really not much you can do. But if you start seeing some clinical signs, discharge, things like this, and then you go in and check and see it, make sure that the cervix is still plugged and intact, and make sure that there's no ascending infection, things like this, and or the placental attachment, you know, by ultrasound is still maintained and in good health, and there's not a secondary infection, things like this. So, you know, these are all things that good managed farms will do routinely just to make sure, because you have a big investment. And you know, you're talking about a year out of a mare's career. The average mare has 6.3 foals per lifetime. So, you know, you don't get a lot of opportunities. That's the average. Obviously, some overcome that and have like 8 to 10, and others have a lot less. So you want to make sure that, you know, everything is intact and anatomy is in good shape, and that you maintain your pregnancy because you're protecting your investment. And that's really why you're going to do it routinely.
Absolutely. Well, as always, valuable time spent. Dr. Stephen Allday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Lubricin and Reborn. Visit Lubricin.com and visit thealldayway.com, where Steve and Alex Hassinger will answer your questions, help you with your pony, with your backyard horse, your trail horse, whatever, your sport horse, whatever you've got. You can't do better than reaching out for Steve and Alex and everybody involved at Lubricin and the team with Dr. Allday. Steve, we'll catch up with you soon in person. Haven't seen you in ages. You doing any?
You got it, Steve.
You doing any cow poking? You hitting any rodeo?
You know, I get the horses out. I got an injury on my old horse. I'm just trying to get him healed up and get him, you know, the second half of the year. I got a young horse I bought out in California, so I'm getting him tuned up.
Nice. Very nice. Well, we're looking forward to you holding up that next belt, the next team roping competition rope. Just great. Dr. Allday, right. always helpful. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Dr. Allday, just so great. You know, these are things. and I hope I'm asking the right questions. I mean, in a lot of cases, I just it's whatever he says and whatever, you know, curiosity pops in my head. That's what makes these so, for me, that's what makes them so much fun. And they've been, I mean, so educational over the last, well, I mean, he's been doing this since the show started in 2005. Unbelievable. Horse Health Today, Luberson and Reborn. Let's take a break. We're into hour three. We've got about 45 minutes left, and we've got visits with Seth Merrow, and we'll see what Seth's schedule is when he's coming down to Belmont. You know, they've let Seth off the leash. He's a free range Merrow now. He shows up at Gulfstream, at Woodbine, Belmont. So he'll be, I'm sure he and the Capital OTB team will be coming down next week as well. And we got to get a visit in for Countdown to the Crown. We're literally counting down with Jeremy Plonk. So Jeremy and Seth in the next 45 minutes. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit DRF.com/multi-track today.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got 2 sandwiches, one for back at the hotel, and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000. 938-4643.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.